Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
It's just been hot. I got butt sweat. And hello and welcome to episode 203. Tonight's show is brought to you by The White Line Doesn't Work.
What?
It's about Kenny's driving rant. So for the last week driving to work, I've been trying to stop at the White Line, and it's just impossible to see and move around in the city of Salida if you stop at the line.
Oh, yeah. Like, people park on the road, so you just can't see, like, if you need to turn or cross a street or whatever. Yeah. Like, you can't really see. You got to, like, stop and then, like, creep out until you can see a little bit. And then still sometimes it's like, yeah, I don't think anyone's coming, so I'm just going to go for it.
I think the bigger takeaway there is, as we were talking about double turn lanes, for example, that's where it can matter because you're fucking a whole other line of people.
Oh, yeah. But we also had talked about, like, you stop at the big white line at the stop sign.
Sure.
And that's what I'm talking
about. Yeah, like, you can't always, like, if you do that in Salida, most of the time people are parked, like, on the cross street where you're stopped. So you can't, if you're at the white line, you can't see the cross traffic to know if you can, you know, cross that street or turn onto that street or whatever.
Sure. There are times, especially making right-hand turns, where, yeah, you need to creep into that thing, but maybe look first. Like, hey, is there someone trying to cross the street, for example? Maybe I won't be a dick and, you know, insert half of my giant vehicle in the road there where they can't get by. Or am I going fucking dead straight at a green light? So I'm at a light, turns red, I'm going fucking straight, and I pull my vehicle so my rear goddamn wheels are at that line, and then you fuck the person in the right turn lane. And for no reason. Yeah. For no reason. You weren't looking. Traffic is irrelevant to you. When the light turns green, you're going to go straight. But instead, you decided to be a dick and fuck someone else's drive up. That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Yeah.
If you have,
since,
if you, if you have,
Kenny's,
zero,
Kenny's talking, does he want
to
go first?
If you have zero need to go past the fat fucking line, stop at the fat fucking line, because there's other people around you who need to go past the fat fucking line. That's my point. I should have been more clear.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
All right. Well, yeah, I'll go. I'm talking. I got nothing that cool. I put a new rear tire on my Husky 350. It is an IRC TR8 for anybody that cares. And yeah, it went fine. No issues. And it rides good. It has pretty good street manners. And it's a little bit more aggressive as far as dirt riding goes. So yeah, I think it was a good all-around purchase. Pretty happy with that. I'm going to try the front, the corresponding front tire in a minute. But my front tire's in decent shape, but I may rip it off anyway because the front's a little sketchy on that bike with the current 50-50 that's on there. Other than that, went out into the Uintas, just did some more exploring. I just keep kind of edging my way north on that whole route. And
Kenny edges.
Yep, that's right. And it's friggin', God, it hasn't rained here in 3 months, basically. 3 months, not an ounce of rain. I think we got a tenth of an inch, like one of those days and one of those months, but it might as well have been zero. And it's getting freaking crazy, and the forecast still shows no rain. So I think we might go a legitimate 4 months, if not longer, with no rain in Utah, which is, that's pretty bananas. That's very unusual.
Yeah, we had like 2 days that it rained, and we actually had some flash flooding, I think, the second day. Mm-hmm. When was that,
Matt? We talked about it in the last show.
Okay. Well, yeah. Yeah, it's just been hot and dry. Other than those 2 days, the entire summer's just been hot and dry.
Yeah. I'm over it, and everything is so blown out. It's crazy. Even going up on stuff that I don't think is driven that often, and at like 10,000 feet, and you're just on a Jeep road, and it's just blown the fuck out. Just super moon dusty. So yeah, I'd like it to rain. That would be really cool. But that's all I got.
All right, Matt, you want to go?
Nope, I have nothing to talk about.
You went for a bike ride, didn't you?
Nope, we recorded since then.
Oh, okay. I don't know what day it is.
I do, and yeah, I'm...
It's Wednesday. It's that day in between Tuesday and Thursday.
Right, yeah.
Also, I'm just going to throw this out there. A Nissan Frontier with 3 bikes in the back and 10 bikes... on a trailer.
Boxed bikes.
Does not go uphill very fast.
What year is the Nissan Frontier?
1998.
Is this your Is this your frontier?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Ooh, can we V8 swap it? I just watched a video of a guy who just does a bunch of motor stuff. And I think he's usually an LS guy. And he was talking about the Nissan V8 that's in the Titan and how it's actually a great motor. And they're actually pretty easy and cheap to find in junkyards. And they swap into almost all other Nissans. Like, they just bolt in.
That will not be true on my truck.
Ah. Are you sure, though?
I know how much room is under that hood. And without cutting out the firewall, that's just not going to fit in there. And then if you do cut out the firewall...
What if the engine just goes... The engine's not going to go further back. It's just going to go further forward.
I think if we had to get real nuts, what is it? Some of the drift guys have been running that Honda K24. I think that would be a much more appropriate swap for that.
No, you want that V8. It's like, you know, I think it's only mid 300 horsepower, but it's a torquey bastard, I think. And that would just be awesome. We'll work on that.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming the K24 would be much lighter and
yeah, but they're like $1 zillion because all the Honda people and everybody are swapping them. You want something cheap. That's the idea. So it's called a VK56. That's the engine. Anyway, if you're bored, maybe do some Googling. We'll see if a... Ooh, yours is a 98.
There is...
What generation is yours? Do you know? Like, does it have a name?
Mine is the first Frontier.
First gen Frontier. Okay.
Yep.
First
there
gen
is,
Frontier.
There is a bolt-on turbo kit for that truck.
Nah, we don't want that. Oh, yeah. Here we go. VK swap. Oh, yeah.
Dude, nothing bad will happen if you turbo, like, 195,000 miles. Nothing bad will happen.
Well, I'll do some reading. Maybe it might be third. You might have to get a third gen Frontier.
Dude, a K24A cost $500 on eBay.
Really?
Yeah. Dude.
Okay, interesting. Well, anyway,
I wouldn't buy a $500 eBay.
Dude, you're 800.
For a motor swap. Trust me. Just trust me.
The high compression one from the Acura is $800.
That doesn't sound right. Those things are super sought after. I haven't looked at it in a minute, granted, but I can't believe the money that stuff used to or went for even 10 years ago. As LS swaps got more popular, just a 5.3 iron block, like the piece of shit that's in every basic Chevy truck, they used to be $300 to $500 at any junkyard, and now they're like thousands of dollars. It's insane.
I feel like the prices that Matt's looking at for Honda Motors on eBay is actually the same price that it was when I was into Honda Motors.
Yeah, that just doesn't sound right. Some of that stuff has gotten so expensive. I know, like, yeah, go try to find a B18 right now. Good Lord. It would be so much money.
Are those? But you gotta think, though, like, they're getting more expensive because there just aren't as many.
Well,
of
exactly.
Them.
That's 100% why.
Old motor.
It's a very old motor.
All right.
That's a lot of car talk. People's eyes have definitely glazed over. I mean, there's like one person who's perked up and is like, oh.
Here's the thing. There's a
2JZ, no shit.
There's a place, 4-Piston Racing is selling a fully built one for 10 grand. So that's what we should do.
Overnight parts from Japan.
No, in all seriousness, yeah, the shop is pretty small. We got 3 pallets of bikes in, and I loaded them up on a trailer and brought them home, and I built 6.5 of them already on my day off. So
why are you building stuff on your day off? Are you
I'm clocked in for
okay,
but I did it at home because one, there's not room for them or me there, and two, it's just amazing how much you can get done when
the phone's not ringing
and no one's asking you questions and you're not just stopping real quick to check somebody out for a tube or
my job is 75% solving other people's problems. Now, ultimately, they're my problem, I suppose. But yeah, it's wild. Like, if I can sit at my house, which I have done before, you know, whether I'm sick or on vacation or whatever, when I do my ordering job from home, I am so focused and get so much shit done. It is unbelievable. But at work, I've got whatever. Some employees got into a fight or a rep wants to, you know, show me this new saddlebag that's going to revolutionize the industry or whatever the fuck problem is going on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I've been, I got my stitches out, and I've been taking medicine for acid reflux, so I actually have like an appetite, which means I can eat, which means I don't feel like I'm dying all of the time and losing a bunch of weight, and I feel better than I have in probably like 2 years, which is pretty awesome. I mean, it's a little, I'm not going to lie, it's a little bit anxiety inducing because for one, like, even if you're in like a bad routine, or at least me, for me, in a routine of like always monitoring, like, how am I using my hand? Am I going to make it hurt? How much appetite do I have? Have I eaten enough to go and do whatever it is I want to do without just bonking and feeling terrible for the rest of the day? Like, all of these things that I'm used to doing, very suddenly, I don't have to do. And that's actually really difficult.
So even though it's feeling like, good gives you anxiety?
Even though it's a really... Well, yeah, like, even though it's a good change, like, none of this is bad at all. The fact that, like, something changed so quickly, like, with, like, pain and energy and all of that, like, all of a sudden, like... I don't know what to do with myself. Like, it's, yeah, it's just, there's like a little bit of anxiety. And then also it's like, this is really awesome. And I'm just waiting for something bad to happen, like to fuck it up.
I'm having a really good I'm having a really good time. I don't like this. This is not good.
No, it is. It's great. I love it and it's awesome. But I also, at the same time, like I have problems when stuff, like when my routine is changed and, yeah, it's odd. Like, I feel like I hear what I'm saying and I also think that it's crazy, but that doesn't mean it's not true. So
I'm just letting you know that from an outsider's perspective, you sound crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's okay.
Or just someone who loves, who has to have a routine or else they feel very lost. Anyway. Yeah. So I am feeling really good. Surgery scars healing up. I got the stitches out yesterday. I can do a lot of stuff with my hand without it hurting. And it's just, it's better every day. So yeah, I mean, it's awesome, but yeah, it's weird, but it's awesome. And I'm about to kind of did some packing tonight. I'm going to go tomorrow morning and head up to Leadville. Today's Wednesday. I'm going to go to Leadville Thursday and Friday and work in the bike shop there like I have the past 2 years. Work with Raphael at Leadvelo BC Casa. And it should be fun. Should be a little stressful. Kind of a, I don't know, throwing myself in the deep end a little bit. Just first day back at work doing Leadville stuff. Leadville Trail 100 stuff. But it'll be all right. I'll handle it. And then I'm going to head out to, let's see, probably Friday evening. I'm going to drive back over. I don't know. Our listeners might remember last year I went deer hunting over just on the other side of Independence Pass. And this year I'm going to do some elk hunting over there. It is an over-the-counter elk unit, which means you can buy a tag and hunt any of Colorado's over-the-counter elk units, including that one. And since the area where we live here in Howard also resides in an over-the-counter unit, I can hunt here, but it's fucking hot here at the beginning of September. Just like Kenny said, it's been hot and dry. And if I can go and hunt somewhere where I know the minimum elevation is going to be 10,000 feet or so, and it just goes up from there, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be cool. It's going to be comfortable. I will probably get stormed on, but that's okay. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. So yeah, Saturday, I'm going to do a little bit of scouting over there. And that's been it for the most part. I went to do some elk scouting not far from the house and got caught in a gnarly thunderstorm. But luckily, I was below tree line. I mean, it was like one of those storms. Kenny, have you ever had this happen, like where you're in a thunderstorm and it's more thunder than not thunder?
We have almost zero thunderstorms here in Utah. It's actually unnerving. When it thunders out, everyone stops what they're doing and they go outside. It's extremely rare to get thunder and lightning. You'll get like some distant lightning that you'll see, but you usually don't hear it a whole lot. Very unlike Memphis, let's say, or definitely Colorado, where they got all these crazy snap storms. But, you know, Memphis, you'd have a thunderstorm once a week, practically.
Yeah, pretty much. This was, so the Sangre de Cristo Mountains are just one large, almost north to south ridge of mountains. It's a range, I guess, but it's kind of has like a central spine to it. And the difficult thing about being on our side of the mountains is, unless you're looking at a weather radar, it can be perfectly sunny with a few little puffy fucker clouds. And then all of a sudden, there's a fucking storm coming over the mountain. Like, you don't see it. Yeah, it's just like, hey, motherfucker, did you miss me? And it just pops over the mountain and just shit mixes you. And that's pretty much what happened. Like, I, you know, it was a pretty decent day. It was a tiny bit cloudy. And I was up above tree line. And I was in this spot where there are all these fossils. Like, I was looking for one that I had seen probably 2 years ago when I was marmot hunting. And since I'm kind of looking around at all of the rocks trying to find this one, I start seeing all of these other ones. And so it's really cool, but they're all like in, and I think we looked it up when I found that first one. You are allowed to take fossils. Like, you could collect one and take it. What's that?
Invertebrate fossils.
Yeah.
You can't take.
No T-Rexes.
You find a dinosaur bone.
Yeah, no, like dinosaur bones. And these were all invertebrate, like really like weird shaped. Like, I think one looked like a plant and there were some kind of circular ones. There was something that looked like animal tracks in a rock, but they're all in these rocks that are huge. Like, you would need a fucking bulldozer to get them out if you wanted to take one home, or a sledgehammer, but that would probably be bad for the fossil. But yeah, so I'm like kind of geeking out over all these fossils that I'm seeing. And then I hear just a little bit of thunder in the distance. And I'm like, huh, okay. And I look and the sky's like a little bit gray right at the top of the mountain. I'm like, all right, well, I didn't come up here to look for fossils. I'm looking for elk. So I'm going to go down into the area where I wanted to look for elk. And then there's a little bit more thunder. Wind kind of get that like icy wind that kind of sucks in towards the storm, and a little more thunder. And pretty soon, it's just black sky and just all thunder. Like, it was just thunder and thunder and thunder and thunder, and every now and then it would be quiet for like 2 or 3 seconds, and then it would just be more and more thunder. And I'm like, oh, fuck. I jogged a little bit to go just get kind of as low as I could before I stopped and put all my rain gear on. And yeah, it was all right. I didn't get struck by lightning, which is nice. Didn't even have any that seemed that close to me, so that was good. But just lots and lots of thunder, some hail. There was enough hail that it looked like it snowed, but it was just a proper mountain thunderstorm. But that was a cool trip too. I put it on Instagram. I found I knew this area is like a mining kind of area in the past, and I found an old cabin, which actually I kind of find old cabins pretty regularly. But they're always really, really small. And I'm talking like 8 by 8, maybe. This one was huge. This was probably like 4 times the size of what I usually find out in the woods, which was really cool. So I'm gonna take Matt up there and show it to him. I think he'll like it.
All right, Dan.
But that was the most exciting part of my week, was storms and feeling better. And yeah, I'm pretty stoked. But we want to go on to new shit. Not a lot. We're going to need people to start sending in manifesto suggestions. We've had one so far. It also crosses into Kenny's, like, how to drive a fucking car.
Okay. So, are we talking about that right now, or what are we doing?
I mean, if you want to, we can, or if you want to save it for when you want to talk about manifesto stuff.
Yeah, we can probably save it.
Okay. Just save it. What new shit do you guys want to talk about?
I have one I want to make fun of.
All right.
This is on Bike Rumor. Forget the UCI. Trek adds ultralight Madone Gen 8 with UCI illegal SRAM 1x build. It only weighs 14.1 pounds.
Wait, does the UCI say you can't have 1x builds?
No, I think it's the weight.
Have like under
the weight.
14.99 pounds. Yeah, but they're weighing this thing without pedals or cages or a computer mount.
Yeah,
or
so it's going to be perfectly legal once you ride it.
UCI transponder. Well, I did some quick...
No, hold on. Whoever wrote that headline needs to go back to fucking grammar school because they made it sound like the SRAM build is the legal part.
Well, that's probably not the entire probably bike. Half done on purpose.
Well,
yeah.
Fuck them.
But yeah, it's 14.1 pounds. And I did some quick math. If you add in a set of Durace pedals and two of Trek's fanciest cages, you've added in... Oh, God, I closed the tab where I did the math. I hate ounces and ounces.
It's probably about 3/4 of a pound.
Well, you easily are adding... No, it's a half a pound of stuff you're adding on in just pedals and cages. And then you need a transponder, and you need a real saddle, and you need a computer mount. So, yeah, this thing is...
The UCI factor all of that stuff in, like...
The weight is for things that can't be removed from your bicycle. So that's why when Wahoo released their Aero computer mount, it has that little bolt you can put in, and then the computer can't be removed. So it factors into your bike weight.
Okay. Got it. I always wondered what the fuck that was for. Well, also, I figured it's for, like, I don't know, mountain biking or riding on rough roads.
Nope. It's to make it a part of the bicycle that cannot be removed during the event, like bottle cages or other easily removable accessories.
All right. So like the battery in your Axis, that's pretty easy to remove.
I don't know. Yeah, I just, that's all I have to talk about is that. I just wanted to make fun of it because it just, yeah. I don't think people realize how heavy pedals are. They're really heavy. They're all metal.
Well, I got one I want to talk about that's not heavy. It is the Vertical Helium Race Dropper Post. The lightest version of that is 263 grams. So if we're looking at like a standard dropper post, if you want to compare weights, let's see. Like a, I mean, and it's not fair to even bring up an Axis Reverb because those are the heaviest things in the world.
I mean, to give you an idea, the Thompson seat post in 330 length weighs about the same.
Yeah. So like a bike yoke seat post, the Revive, which is a normal full-length seat post that's on the lighter end, is 641 grams. Bike Yoke Divine, which is their super light one, but only has, let's see, 80 millimeters of drop, is 386 grams. But this one, in the lightest version, is 60 millimeters of drop, but it does go as long as 120 millimeters of drop.
Come on, you can't tell me it's a light dropper and then tell me it only goes down 2-point-something inches. That ain't gonna do.
That's fine for cross-country.
Maybe for someone with your leg length.
But it can go 120 millimeters. And that one, so basically the heaviest version of this post... So we're talking 410 millimeters long, 120 millimeters of stroke in a 31.6 diameter is 325 grams. So still really freaking light. So I think that's cool. I wish everyone would start making super light dropper posts because why the fuck not? I mean, I guess cost and reliability, but if you, you know, you get good enough at making them, then they don't cost as much to make.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I used to use the little shorty drop on my cross country bike if I used a dropper. And it's, I mean, Matt, like Matt said, it does have a little bit to do with the fact that I'm 5'6" and not 6'2". But just kind of getting the seat post down a little bit to where it won't like punch you in the gut when you're going over like, I don't know, down kind of like technical stuff. That's really nice, but it was always kind of situational for me. Like in some of the cross country racing that I did, I didn't need a dropper post to go faster than the competition downhill. I mean, in some races that I've done, I absolutely needed a dropper post to go as fast as some of the women who were not using dropper posts. So it was very situational, but I think always having a super light, short version of a dropper post for cross country racing is a great idea. What else you guys got?
The bike with the most pivots ever made.
Where'd you see that?
It's a pink bike one. It's called LJB Suspension. You can clickety-clack for a minute if you want to try to find it.
My God, there's so many pivots, they don't even all fit inside the front triangle. Like, what the...
Yeah, there's so many pivots, they had to make a collar to connect even more pivots. They bolted a collar to the seat tube. So anyway, I don't know much about it, but just on the surface, it's very funny because Jesus Christ, that's so...
This looks like
many
some
pivots.
1999 shit.
The issue I have with this kind of stuff is it's cool. I'm glad people are trying to think outside the box, or there's an axle path that they're going after, and then they figure out mathematically how to get there. But the problem is, it's the practical side of things. If the bike is complicated and heavy and creaky, and also this many pivots, at some point it's going to start introducing, like, this many pivots is going to introduce, like, even more pivots that you haven't even thought about, right? Like, it's going to cause so many issues. There's so many bearings. There's so many bolts. There's so many places where it can, you know, get some wiggle going on. The coolest solutions are usually fairly simple. So that's the thing. It's neat, but would I want to own it? Probably not.
What is that called? Occam's razor? The simplest answer is probably the right one.
That might be. I'm not sure if that's the one. We'll say it is.
I was being nice. It's Occam's razor.
Ah, oh shit. Okay, you knew. But yeah, it's too complicated. That's the problem. I'm sure it's cool. Even in the video watching the guy compress this thing with like no air in the shock, it even looks bindy in his little demo video, which is not a good sign.
Did this guy make this like in his garage or?
I don't know. I didn't read the whole thing.
CNC machine or?
I don't know. Don't know the answer to that. Too complicated.
I mean, because we have.
It's kind of like linkage.
Upper and lower shock.
It's kind of like linkage forks. In theory, they could be really cool. But in the real world, price and weight and complexity and servicing, it's hard to beat a regular stanchion fork. We've tried. I think if it works, you would probably see it in some level of motorsport, and they've tried it in motorsport too. There were motorcycles that had all kinds of weird linkage forks, but that was like in the 90s. And a good stanchion fork, it's hard to beat.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
But I will reserve judgment when I have a little bit more time. I have not read the whole article. Maybe it's great. I'm sure there's something cool about it.
Well, speaking of that was a terrible segue. Faction is showing off their prototype 32-inch wheeled bike. Speaking of bad segues, and we had last time when we talked about 32-inch wheeled bikes, our friend Tom sent us a message on Patreon about that.
And which, it says,
well, we'll read it here in just a second. We'll talk about this first. It's got a prototype 32-inch fork that is inverted, and it looks pretty cool. It doesn't look weird. It doesn't, I mean, it just looks like a normal bike. And, you know, I'm sure that it's got pluses and minuses, kind of like when 29-inch wheels first came out. And you're going to hear all of those of you who started mountain biking after 29 was already an established thing. Hold on to your fucking nuts, okay? Because you're going to hear the same exact shit all over again. The wheels are going to be weak. They're going to fold up. The wheels are too heavy. It's too slow. It turns like a boat. What are some of the other ones, Kenny and Matt? Like, what are some of the other,
wheel.
Like, 29-inch sucks?
Yeah,
it's never gonna
maybe,
catch on.
Maybe there was some toe overlap stuff in there or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Just, yeah, the... It's too, it handles too slow. You won't be able to go around switchbacks, all that stuff.
And maybe with the very first 29-inch bikes, that was true. But guess what? They fixed all that shit.
The funny thing is, I'll bet if we rode a first generation 29 bikes, they would feel twitchy as balls.
Oh, yeah, totally. 100%. But, you know, I would rather ride a 2009 29-inch bike than a 2009 26-inch bike.
And are we discussing the UCI portion of it?
Is there a UCI portion of the 32-inch bike?
UCI just said that they're looking into it, whatever that means. If you would like a douchebag comment, it is as follows. As of today, the use of 32-inch wheels is permitted. However, the UCI and the Mountain Bike Commission are closely following the developments in technology. This topic will be discussed at the UCI Management Committee meeting in September.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know why. Like, why does it just sound so douchey? This could be the nicest person in the world who meant the nicest thing in the world, but it just sounds so douchey to me. I don't know why. I think it's because I don't like the UCI. That's probably why.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I didn't see anything about the UCI in this article, but I don't know. It looks cool. I mean, I think it's neat, and I hope that it catches on just so there's just more shit out there.
And, like, why in the hell would the UCI, is it they just want, they want to have a say in this? Like, what does it fucking matter? It doesn't matter.
I don't know. Like, why would you say that someone can't ride a certain wheel size?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like the UCI is just stating that they have a say in the matter, and we're going to look into it, and then we're going to give our final decision in September after the meeting of douchebaggery.
You go ahead and do that, buddy. All right. I'm going to read Tom's thing. Let's see. We didn't really talk that much about the actual faction bike, but it's just a silver alloy prototype bike, and it looks nice. Let's see. Where am I going to? Here on Patreon. Tom says, 32-inch is not ever going to be a thing. Just too big. Front and rear makes the damn things longer than a canoe. One of the times I soloed Old Pueblo, there was a dude that soloed a 32-30 bike. He was a really strong rider and smiled the whole time. But the idea that it was, like, special and fast is kooky. Front, maybe. But nobody would do it twice.
Well, Tom, here's the thing. I will say...
You could just substitute 32 for 29.
No,
there.
I will say that person didn't have good tires. They had unicycle tires.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And are we talking 32 or 36?
32.
Okay, because 36 has been around for a minute because of unicycles, right?
Well, 32 also is around because when I saw the Maxxis prototype 32 Aspen, I went deep down the rabbit hole, and the only tires I could find were unicycle tires, but Nexty makes a rim for it.
Okay.
So, like, I was 100%, like, if I can find a tire, I'm building a 32-inch front wheel tomorrow, and I couldn't find a tire.
Because 36s, I thought 36s had been around for, like, quite a while. 10-plus years ago, I thought they, you know, there's the Dirty Sixer brand, and then the unicycles, and that kind of stuff, right? Didn't we talk about that a really, really long time ago?
Yes, we did. I mean, 36er's been around for a long time.
And then same thing in the 36 world. The tires are like unicycle tires. They're just not good off-road tires. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that 36 is the answer, but once you get quality tires, that was a huge thing that held the 29ers back too. They had to get the first like big fork manufacturer on board, and then they had to get tire manufacturers on board. And once all that stuff caught up, all the other stuff you need to support a 29er, the geometry was no problem. It was fine. They get that figured out. But you need all that other shit. You got to have a good fork. You got to have a good tire. If you don't, you're fucked.
Well, and sorry, I keep moving my chair around. My back kind of hurts. But, I mean, a long time ago, Travis Brown said that Trek was testing one. And the way that they did it is they ran junk tires on 32 and 29. And the 32 was better, all things considered. But as soon as you put a good tire on the 29er, the 32 didn't stand a chance.
Interesting.
And I just looked it up because I had to know. The tire that I could find that was actually available is the V-Tire T-Monster Tire Black. It's $200. It weighs 1,800 grams and is not tubeless ready.
Good Lord.
And it's 26 TPI.
Yeah, 26 TPI. Like, you could read Braille in the TPI on the side of that tire.
It's made with a burlap sack.
It's a burlap sack that's been slathered in rubber, and then the casing has been slapped on. It's the casing, or the tread is glued to the casing like a tubular, probably. It's just, then they spray paint the whole thing black and charge you $200 for it. Like, I could probably make my own 32-inch tire cheaper by just getting a bunch of glue and cutting up some other tires. I couldn't do that. But yeah, I just find it really, really interesting. And I'm not writing it off yet. And for what Tom said, I think the other thing that'd be really interesting is, you know, I've become fascinated by, like, I only got to ride it briefly, but I rode that Hey Duke LVS. And I'm just going to pull it up real quick because I want to make sure 600 millimeter chainstays. And I mean, a 32 inch tire is going to go in there no problem, right? And I'm not saying that 32 is the answer, though. I think the answer, or sorry, I don't think 600 millimeter chainstays are really the answer. But I do think that for a bike that you're going to leave on the ground, you know, something that's just like a flowy trail bike or a bike packing bike and stuff, I would love, and it's tough because I'm just going to have to throw down money and then hope I like it. But I would love to ride a bike with like a 500, 525 chainstay. I think that would be a really balanced feeling bike.
I will say, cross-country racing as an example, there's no compelling reason to have your bike in the air. Yeah, they do jumps and drops and stuff, but you don't need some jukey, playful 27.5 bike to do that. I think we will see 32 fronts in cross-country racing.
Well, only if, because, well, also right now the UCI does not allow mixed wheel sizes in XC.
Wait, what the fuck? You're kidding. Like, no. you're making a joke right now.
I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me. That's why I laughed.
Why would they make that decision? What the fuck is that based on?
At the time of writing, UCI only specifies a minimum wheel size of 20 inch with no maximum wheel size stipulated in the technical regulations. Only in the disciplines of DH and Enduro is a mixed wheel setup permitted, so for now, Mega Mullet, 32 front, 29 rear, is not in the cards for XC.
Well, like, fuck their rules straight in the face. That makes no sense. Someone from the UCI needs to come on the show immediately and tell me why that rule was made. That is the dumbest shit I have ever heard in my life.
Man, I would love that. A lot.
Just like
well, hello, thanks for having me on your show. Oh, wait, it wouldn't be Indian. That was the wrong one. Oh, thank you, chap. What a pleasure to be here. They like puff off a cigar in their like smoking jacket. And it's like, and Kenny's like, yeah, what the fuck? Why can't we run mullet next scene? They're like, oh, heavens.
Yeah, we don't like to use the term mullet. That's derogatory. Well, maybe if I'm bored, I'll do some research. I don't think I care enough, but that is, on the surface, the stupidest shit that I've ever heard of.
The thing, and if I had to guess, this is going to stem or grow out of, or, you know, the seeds were planted in the world where time trial bikes wanted to run smaller front wheels.
I mean, maybe, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I have an idea. I have an idea. What if you're, you know, having a road race and you don't have fucking time trial stages where you have to do all this extra special shit and people carry on extra bikes that are stupid? What if you just did that? That's an easy rule. And then you don't have to worry about time trial bike rules because they don't, they're not raced. Problem fucking solved. Next problem. I can solve it for you.
Kenny, you might quit the show after this, but I watched the Daily Tour recap and the uphill time trial was like probably one of the most entertaining ones.
Did they do a bike change? Because I've seen that before.
No. No bike changes.
Okay.
It was fairly short and it was pretty steep all the way.
I have a fucking idea. Why don't they just do a time trial? And it's you on the fucking bike that you road race on with all the same rules, and you go up a fucking steep ass hill. And the first person
that
fucking
called hill climb.
Exactly. Great. And I totally get the premise. It makes sense. Do that. You already have the bikes that do it.
You do understand that there are some races that have time trial stages where they don't allow them to ride time trial bikes based on the location of the race to make it more accessible to the less funded teams.
Cool. I think it's fantastic. I think, yeah, if UCI is going to ban anything, you know, it should be drugs and time trial bikes. Done.
What? Oh, what about those helmets that look like the glands?
Yeah. It's really simple. Make shit less complicated. Have less pivots on your bike and have less TT bikes in a road race. Boom. All right. Well, anyway, hopefully.
Maybe the UCI should limit the number of pivots allowed.
Also, hold on.
Truly, doesn't that sound insane? But that's basically the same thing as happening right here. To me, it's the exact same level. If they said you can have 36, but not 37 pivots on your bike, and you can also not run mullet. Those, to me, are the exact same level of stupid-ass bureaucracy.
Also, I want to understand how P-O-G-A-C-A-R becomes Pagaccia.
It's Pagaccia. I think you added an extra little fancy thing in the end there. That's not there.
I still don't understand.
Oh, nobody knows. Nobody knows. There's a lot of silent shit in there.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
I just say Poga car.
And you're wrong.
That Poga car guy.
Tadej Pogo car.
Tadej Pogo stick.
Is it one of did they come up with that damn smart car or something?
At least I don't say nuclear.
Wait, do I?
Sometimes.
You know, I'm just not that smart.
Yeah, I probably do too.
I got a text message today from a buddy asking me how to pronounce BV, and I was like, it's BV. You don't pronounce
BV. I call it Buena Vista just to piss people off.
Yeah,
Well, and also, like, I don't know. That's how it's spelled. All right. I'm going to move on to this listener question. This is about Kenny's driving manifesto. This is from Axel. Axel says, manifesto question. People who drive with four-way flashers, how do you know if they are changing lanes, turning, etc.? Do they think we don't know they are bad drivers and put the flashers on so everyone understands? Or are they pretending they are some sort of emergency vehicle, only without a siren? I think if they think it is so dangerous they need four ways on, they should just get off the road. Okay, I feel better now.
Kenny, I get to go first on this.
Go for it.
You know who really does a terrible job of this? Emergency vehicles. Imagine this. You're driving in Salida. There's a lot of traffic, and there's cars parked everywhere. You're approaching a four-way intersection. From behind you, there's a fire truck. All their sirens are blasting. All their lights are flashing. They don't have a... Like, why don't they have... Like, I don't know where this fire truck wants to go. And yes, I need to get out of their way, but there's not very much space for me to get out of their way. I am approaching a four-way where I have the right-of-way and the other traffic, the cross traffic, must stop. That traffic is already solved. So if I knew that the fire truck was turning left, I would forge ahead and, like, maybe speed a little bit, you know, speed up 5 or 10 miles an hour and just clear the intersection before they got there. If I knew they were turning right, I could do the same. If I know that they're going straight, I'll just turn right and divert my course by a block. But when the fire truck or the ambulance or the police are just running all this shit, and then I'm like, well, I don't know where to go to be out of your way. Or
usually, like, the standard, I don't know, action is that you either stop or you pull to the right and stop.
Yeah, so if everyone, yes, if everybody around pulls over to their respective right and stops, there's usually a lane that's kind of created in the middle, and they just go down the middle.
Right.
There is not that in downtown Salida.
Well, they're going
to
make it.
But what I'm saying is, if I pulled to the right and stopped at that four-way intersection, and then they pull up behind me trying to turn right, I'm a dickhead.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry that much about it. Like, you know, you do what's reasonable to get out of the way, and sometimes you can't get all the way out of the way, and then the fire truck's going to figure it out. It's kind of like asking, what do you do, you know, when there's a fire truck in a parking garage? You're just like, yeah, that's pretty rare. Let's not worry about that.
Yeah, except it really pisses me off because I don't know how, like, I want to be out of the way as best as possible, and I don't know how to.
It sounds like your new escape route is always go faster than the emergency vehicles, and then it won't ever be a problem.
Done.
Boom. Solving.
Kenny said so.
Solving problems. To go back to the four-way flasher thing, I think there's a lot of reasons people do it. It is very confusing. We have a different thing in Utah that we'll talk about. I don't really think it's manifesto or a driving thing. We've talked about it once or twice. It's just a curiosity. So back to four-way flashers. In Memphis, I know some people used to use them and they would turn their flashers on and then go drive 100 miles an hour because that's, I guess, some type of pass. Now, why people do
it. You got an emergency.
And for sure. Yeah.
Don't ask. It's just an emergency.
Yeah. And I understand if your car's fucking broke down or something, you're like on a spare on the interstate and you're in the right lane and you have a flashers on. Like, I guess that's reasonable. But why people are doing it driving around at like kind of normal speed makes no sense to me. Is that really what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
So what do you guys think? Why are those people doing that?
I mean, I've always just assumed that someone that has some sort of either real or imagined emergency and they want to maybe encourage some people to...
Do they want people to stay away?
I think it's to encourage some people to maybe get out of their way as well as give them kind of a hall pass. I think a lot of people see it as like a hall pass to drive kind of aggressively. Like, I don't know, like if you were... I don't know, 2 miles from a hospital or 3 miles from a hospital. And I don't know, you're using a table saw and you cut your finger off. You're not going to call 911 and wait for an ambulance to get there and take you to the hospital. You're going to get in your, like, grab your finger and fucking drive 100 miles an hour to the hospital and probably have your four-way flashers on. Now, is everyone with their flashers on holding a finger and driving to the hospital? Probably not. But they might feel as though they want to do that kind of thing. And that's just I don't know. If someone's acting a fool and has their flashers on, I just get out of the way because they're either really having an emergency or they're just dumb.
The other reason to have flashers on would be I have some type of problem. My vehicle is as off the road as can possibly be, and I want to be visible. That's really what they're designed for. They're emergency flashers. They're not for driving fucking fast. If you need to drive fast, just fucking drive fast. Like if you're, you know, if someone's having a baby or you're missing a finger, just fucking drive fast to the hospital and you get pulled over, show them the baby coming out or show them the finger and then you're fine.
Speaking of babies trying to come out.
Yeah.
My boss told a story. One of his kids was almost birthed in the front seat of an old Ford pickup. Wife works at the hospital. It must have been the younger kid because she knew she had already, you know, it was the second child. And apparently when they got to the hospital, they were like, no, 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 no. And they know her. They're like, get in the wheelchair. She's like, if I sit down, this baby's coming out and I'm not going to deliver a baby in the waiting room. So she like crawled into a room to have her baby.
Oh my God. I mean, at that point, why wouldn't you just like, if the baby's on its way out, just have it in your freaking living room or something, man? Like, I don't know.
Never had any babies.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to be one of those people that's judgmental about how pregnancy is treated like a medical condition instead of just a thing that happens to make more animals.
Jesus Christ. Speaking of making more animals, I picked up a baby deer off the road this week was like the size of a small medium dog.
Yeah, this was probably like a 20 to 30 pound deer, maybe.
It was 20 to 25 at most.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be Thanksgiving dinner.
It was super fresh, and yeah.
So back to flashers real quick. There's a thing in Utah that I still haven't wrapped my head around why it happens. The amount of people here that just pull over, especially on the interstate, and they don't have any emergency. They have their cars working fine. All of their tires are inflated, and they'll just pull over on the side of the road. By the way, don't ever do that shit on the goddamn interstate. I don't care if you take a fucking phone call, whatever the fuck, like... If it's that much of an emergency, just answer your goddamn phone and drive and get off at the first exit or something if you feel like you need to do that. When you pull over to the interstate, you're going to fucking die. It's really simple. Don't ever, ever, ever fucking pull your car over on the interstate. By the way, also, you got a flat tire. I'm sorry. If it's already gone all the way flat and it's on the fucking rim, drive that motherfucker to the next exit. Just drive slow on the shoulder. Get that goddamn car off the interstate. What are you going to do? Change that tire on the side of the interstate and get murdered? That is just the dumbest shit in the world. So you got to buy a $150 rim. Like, who fucking cares? You already fucked up and didn't pay attention to your car anyway. Just ruin your rim. Get off the goddamn road.
I was on my way to a bike race once and got like a violent flat tire on my, I think it was in the Element, maybe? The Element or the Fit?
Yeah.
And it actually, like, it blew out violently enough that, like, the people, I was in the left lane, like, doing probably 5/10 over the speed limit. And, like, all of a sudden my front, you know, like, the car just pulls one direction and I kept my shit together and, like, but it was obvious that it happened so fast and violently that, like, traffic in the two right lanes next to me, like, they slowed down and, like, made sure that I could like swerve over to the side of the road in front of them.
Yeah.
And I got to the tire shop and it just so happened that I think I put my spare on. I'm pretty sure I like pulled off and put the spare on and went to a tire shop in the middle of nowhere. And it just so happened that this dude that had been driving a horse trailer that I had just passed, like he, you know, hit the brakes as soon as my tire went. And he's like, oh, are you the person who like blew the tire out on the interstate? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you saved that. He's like, that was good. And I'm like, yeah, that could have been bad. Like it was fast.
So anyway, in Utah, there are people that just pull over on the fucking side of the road and they do it everywhere. Just go down I-15, our main interstate, north, south. Look at the number of people pulled over on the side of the road. And like, I know these cars are not blown up. Don't get me wrong. That shit's going to happen once in a while. Like you own a Ford and your shit just turns off. Like that's going to happen and then you have no choice, right? But these people are not having that problem. And they'll do it on all these side roads too. They just pull over on this fucking side of the road and it's like pretty inconvenient. You
is
have
it
to like
a Mormon thing?
I think it is. I think what they're doing is I'm assuming it's all people that like kind of have no, they don't have a whole lot of like privacy at home and all that stuff. So I think they are pulling over and they're masturbating. That's my only assumption.
Well, I'll tell you one, like Colorado has a new hands-free law. So sometimes I'm leaving work and I'm like, oh man, I'm going to turn on a podcast before my 30-minute drive home. And I just pull over on like the side of the street parking. And people look at you like you're insane. Like I use my blinker, I pull over, I put the car in park, and there'll be like people walking their dog and stuff. And then I pick up my phone and I like pick out a podcast and I might be like, yo, yeah, I want this for dinner. Yeah, yada, yada. Answer Andrea's text or whatever. Set my shit down. And when I like put the car in drive, like people are looking at me like, is that guy going to get out and like rob me? And I'm like, dude, I'm a mountain bum in a 2016 Subaru, like not a creeper van, you know, like.
So you're one of these, yeah. You're one of these people, maybe. I don't know. But all these people
I'm talking about, I pull over in a parking spot on the side of a 20-mile
road. Oh, okay. Well, these people are not in parking spots, and they're not on like they're not on a side road either. What's so weird to me is if I need to do that shit, it's happened to me before. There's been some weird shit. Like it's happened to me where I'm driving home and there's a burglary alarm going off at one of our stores, and I'm like gonna.
And you suddenly have to.
And I have to go like, you know, answer a phone call for some frantic person. And I've got like the cops calling me on the other line and I'm trying to pull up like security camera footage or whatever. And at that point, I'm like, fucking shit. I am going to get out of the road, out of the way. I'm going to go find the first parking lot or the first like actual size street, like a neighborhood street, because we live in suburbia, and like get out of the way where I can like stop my car and do whatever the fuck I need to do. But these people are like on semi-major roads, just pulled over in the emergency lane. That's what I'm saying. It's fucking weird. And so if anyone in Utah knows what's happening, let me know. I'm assuming it's masturbation. That's my assumption.
All right. Let me see if we had another question.
We didn't.
We just had a little comment, a little listener appreciation from Ryan. He says, thank you for the technical deep dives and humor. Been listening since Matt talked about banging a customer's wife and you all were racing. If you have a second, just curious what you came up with for adaptive solutions for riders with a prosthetic. Thank you. Love the moto content and Kenny Utah stories. Also, I think Andrea should try a moto track day when feeling better.
Like on a sport bike?
I don't know. I don't need another hobby that can kill me, so no.
I remember that story.
I don't remember that story.
It was when a customer was telling me that tubeless doesn't work and he needed to buy some super light 29er tubes and S-Works tires and a couple of the single use stands bottles to get his bike ready for Leadville.
Okay.
And then you had sex with his wife?
I made a joke when talking about it that if that's what the guy thinks is good, his wife probably needs to get banged by someone else because he doesn't know what he's doing or something like that.
Ah.
I still feel bad about that like comes up sometimes when I'm trying to fall asleep and I'm like, that was a little too far.
Nah, you're fine. You also, you had the wine lady, right? That was trying to seduce you into her house.
Oh God. That was a great one too. Yeah. She was like, she all but like looked at the note she had written on her hand in ink pen and was like, thanks for all your help. I got you a bottle of wine, but I forgot it at my house. And somehow, without missing a beat, I was like, yep, I'm here all week. Drop it off whenever.
You should have been like, all right, see you at your house.
You know, I have no regrets. Because I mean, what? Never mind. I'm not going to say that part. But like, I got a better story out of it than the alternative.
Good stuff.
Adaptive solutions for folks with a prosthetic. I haven't personally helped any riders with a prosthetic. I have worked with a couple.
What was the most recent guy?
Well hold on. I was going to run through two really tall people I've worked with. One, I'm convinced that his bikes were too big. And yeah, that one was because like I did a bunch of like homework and math and stuff. And I like begged him to try riding a shorter stem, and he just wouldn't do it. And that
he
one
didn't have a prosthetic.
No, I'm going through riders that are outside of the norm.
Okay.
And then I had a rider who had a stroke, and he had really bad dexterity in his right hand. And this is like pre-electronic shifting being as affordable as it is today. You know, it was like back in like Dura-Ace only 10 speed. and I routed his time trial bike to have the front shifter on the right, because that one was just, you know, big, small, left shifter on the left, because he had really good dexterity in his right hand, or left hand. And then most recently is the guy with the, think he is an or at or slightly above elbow amputee, and but he doesn't have a prosthetic. So I haven't worked with anyone with a prosthetic, but I know that there are essentially like ball and socket style. Imagine it like a SPD for your handlebar. I mean, I know that there are riders that are running those with their prosthetic, but that really only works if you have something that is standing in for gripping the bar. So, yeah. And then one other one, Oddity, in talking about my most recent customer with, I think his name's Burnsy, the owner of Oddity up in Fort Collins. He was down at the shop one day, and he explained that he does not take custom orders for handlebars, but people with arm length discrepancies or in need of an not off the shelf bar for a prosthetic or something, or you know, a medical type reason, those don't count as custom, and he always loves helping those people out. So, you know, and that goes way back to a long time ago. I saw a video of a BMX rider that like one hand was considerably, or one arm was considerably shorter than the other. And some dudes made him some custom bars that had, you know, like a 4 or 6 inch discrepancy in height between right and left. And he could actually ride with both hands on the bars then. So, yeah, that's really all that I know. I've never worked with anyone with a prosthetic. I was almost said unfortunately, but I'm actually kind of glad I haven't, just for the sake of that means that there's not, I don't want there to be enough people that they're just common and everywhere, because I would prefer everyone had both hands and feet at their disposal, because it probably makes riding and running and being in life a lot easier. So,
yeah.
I wonder what the stats on that are. Percentage wise, the number of people missing limbs, you would think probably that number is going down as things like people are losing less arms and legs and farm equipment and that kind of stuff, right?
Well, and also I think that we're seeing a lot. If we go back in time, I think a lot of limb loss was from war.
Yeah, and that's probably reasonable.
And to borrow a line from, I can't remember which podcast it was, so I won't give them credit to do it wrong, but it was Behind the Bastards. You know, back in the days when we just fed boys to the machine guns, you know, that there was a lot of people that got really fucked up. But I don't think war is quite as like just, oh, well, let's send another 10,000 boys to march into the machine gun nests. And, oh, those 10,000 died too. Let's get 10,000 more. I think we're a little beyond that these days. So
slightly.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah. It says there's 185,000 people in the U.S.
185,000 people in the U.S. that are missing limbs? That's half of us.
No, there's 341 million people in the U.S., Kenny.
Oh, 1,000. Sorry, I heard million in my brain. I'm like, man, that's a lot of people.
2.1 million people living in the U.S. with limb loss, 185,000 people every year, and 507 people a day.
Jesus Christ, are you serious? That's fucking bananas. That's like, that's approaching 10%.
85% of...
Or 1%. I'm very bad at numbers. It's very late.
Well...
don't listen to anything I'm saying.
So 85% of lower limb amputations are preceded by a foot ulcer. So maybe...
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, diabetes accounts for...
So there's a lot of old and extremely unhealthy people that just like limbs fall off essentially.
Yeah, so vascular disease is 54%, cancer is 2%, and trauma is 45%.
Okay, got it. They're still big numbers, though.
Upper limb is 35%. Lower limb is 65%. And let's see, what's the most people that receive an amputation are between ages of 45 to 64, 46%, and then 65 to 84 is 36%. And I am citing the Amputee Coalition's limb loss in the U.S. white or single PDF from 2021. So, yeah. Lifetime health care costs for people with limb loss is around $500,000. Lifetime health care costs. So about $150,000 more in lifetime cost to lose a limb. African-Americans 4 times more likely.
I don't think you have to read all of the facts.
Well, no, hold on. I think this is really, really prescient too. African-Americans 4 times more likely to have an amputee or amputation than white Americans. So let's back up some of this data. If 2 million people in the U.S., but people of color are 4 times more likely, so that means that they are 80%, right, roughly. How many people of color do you see riding bikes?
I mean, I think that, I think it comes back to, you know, a, I would assume like a diabetes situation, right? Is that kind of what those numbers were saying to you guys?
Well, diabetes and trauma, but I think a lot of it too is just we exist in a very white portion of the population, and white people aren't the most amputated people. So you stack some stuff up and then, yeah.
Well, I guess what we're talking about is probably a previously able-bodied person who is now not as able-bodied. I'm not thinking about somebody who weighs 500 pounds or is 80 years old as far as like what we're talking about with prosthetics and mountain bikes.
Yeah, and I think those, yeah, they weren't in our circle previously.
Nope.
Is what I'm getting at.
All right. Well, that is it for our listener questions. If you have a manifesto suggestion or just a topic you want us to discuss on air, head over to jrashow.com and fill out our web contact form. And again, even if it says something along the lines of like, you're agreeing to receive emails from Just Riding Along Outdoor Media, I promise you I will not send out a mass email ever, ever.
Outside of the weekly dick pic, you will get no emails from him.
Exactly.
For the record, that's just a...
It's just Matt's poorly... dick over and over again every week.
I was going to say it's a poor AI rendition.
After the second one, it's not that exciting.
After a cold winter ride.
Oh, those don't count. Sad baby bird doesn't count.
All right. I'm going to read our patrons so I can finish packing and we can shut it down and I can go take care of people having emergencies in Leadville. So at $10 per month, we've got Zozo, Tom's P, Tom Pickle, Timothy.
The anti-32er.
Timothy, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Tennessee Tantrum, Taylor Zwift, Taper Bore Pro, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended, Oprah Spin Free, Noah, My Pal Dal, MTV Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Leland, Kurt, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, JC, Jake D, Green Giant, Gordon, Frank the Tank, Fart Noises, Eric, Chunk Norris, Cam Irish One, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel of Dicks, Apple Bottom, Make Him Wanna Bite, Angry JRA Forever, AJ Aaron _ at $11.11 per month. People who ride inverted forks were just one bad haircut away from becoming CrossFit coaches. Patamillan Disco at $14, Dean at $16.50, and at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Brian, Snorting Creatine to See the Poga Car Shaped Hat Man. I'm just going to mispronounce it on purpose. At $26.06 per month. Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors. We're the reason your GoPro footage is now evidence. At Fitty.
I mean, he could kind of pass as the Hat Man. He's like really tall and or slender man. Also, that helmet should be illegal.
Yeah, the Hat Man is who Freddy Krueger is based off of. That's the creepy story where like people throughout history, independently of each other, have seen the Hat Man in their sleep paralysis episodes. And that's how we got Freddy Krueger.
So as we wrap it up, we were talking about burlap sacks earlier, and I was thinking I kind of want to start up a burlap sack bedding company, and it already exists. Somebody beat me to it, and it's not a joke website either. So that's fucking insane. So there's that.
All right. Yeah, that's a thing. All right, everyone. We're going to wrap it up before it gets any more boring with burlap sack bedding and whatever the fuck else we talk about. You guys got anything else?
Absolutely not.
Nope. Shut it down.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.
how you create